Dear listeners, in tonight's podcast, we are discussing the first four episodes of the new series of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. One thing we will also be discussing is the similarities between Christopher Pike and Sir Keir Starmer's hairstyles. Both are sporting a luxuriant, vertical cliff-faced wall of carefully coiffured and gelled hair. The question is, which one is better? There's only one way to find out.
No, that's enough.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in a long line of Staggering Stories podcasts. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Asterman.
I'm Fake Keith.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
And I, yes, I am...
scarred beyond recognition due to the cat being over-enthusiastic with her love.
Actually, yes. All along my tummy. My tummy is sore. Looks like I've had my appendix out.
Well, you're not seeing where the cat scratched me.
Mainly because it's up inside. indeed.
Anyway, without further ado, bizarre hairstyles besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Blake 7 News,
oh, yeah.
Second series, Blu-ray. Fans of the convicted kiddie fiddler Rog Blake can rejoice as the trailer and details for the second series of Blake 7 on Blu-ray are now available. Similar to the Doctor Who collection sets, you can expect a good set of new special features, in this case including the likes of Matthew Sweet in conversation with the second Travis, Brian Croucher, and designer Roger Murray Leach, tributes to Jacqueline Pierce, Servalan, and David Jackson, Gan. A new documentary called Liberation, Series 2. Part 2 of Kevin John Davies' Making of Blake 7 documentary. New commentaries, etc. What does appear to be missing as compared to the Series 1, the new model shots they created for the first box set. Clearly the first box set sold enough for a second, but perhaps not well enough to justify the expense of the new model work.
That's disappointing.
It is due out on the 10th of November.
I could be wrong about that, but nobody's mentioned it anywhere, so yeah. I assume it's not there.
That is disappointing.
Yeah.
That's half the fun.
Yeah, it's really good in the first box set.
Yeah, Blake 7 is one of those series I'd like to sort of revisit at some time or other.
Yeah.
Another thing for the retirement plan. Go through all of Blake 7 again. And Doctor Who from the beginning, of course. I've never done that.
I've never done that. I've done it a couple of times.
He can do it without having to be bothered by work.
Yeah.
He can watch like 5 stories a day. And one day we'll go, "Have you heard from Adam this week?" And we'll go, "No."
Oh, God.
Has he done it again? And we'll come round and find you adhered to the leather of your sofa.
Sort of grown in.
Star Wars news.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Smith, a new villain. Some years ago now, rumour suggested that Matt Smith was going to be a big bad in Rise of the Skywalker, but a late rewrite had replaced him with Palpatine, who had somehow returned.
Yeah.
True or not, it appears that Smith might be going for another chance to be evil in the upcoming Star Wars : Starfighter film. So far, we know that May 2027's slated film will be directed by Shawn Levy, who directed the likes of The Adam Project, Deadpool and Wolverine, will star Ryan Gosling, who despite his name is actually a human being and not a baby bird. Maya Goth is expected to be playing one baddie, with Smith as another.
Ooh.
It is thought to be set 5 to 6 years after Rise of the Skywalker, potentially kicking off a new era for the series. A year before that, in May 2026, we should get the first new Star Wars film for a few years in The Mandalorian and Grogu. set between the original and the sequel trilogies.
Right. So what Matt Smith's villain going to be called? Darth Chin.
I hope this takes off. I hope that he gets it. He deserves.
Yes. Yeah, he's had a lot of luck in Hollywood.
He's done fairly well for himself. I mean, there's the House of the Dragon series.
Yes, but TV.
But he hasn't actually made it into films.
He's been in a few.
Terminator Genesis.
Yeah, he's been in a few, but unfortunately the films that he has chosen or has been chosen for him have not caught the public imagination.
No. Morbius. Yeah, he was great in Morbius, but it was not a great film.
But he was the best thing in Morbius.
He was.
Terminator Genesis didn't come to anything either.
That was meant to be a trilogy. Yeah. It was going to be a big bad for the trilogy. Yeah. But he was only a small part in that first one.
Yeah.
Does he only play baddies?
Yeah. Okay. He's British.
Who finished him off on the good guys? So,
Yeah, and in America nowadays, to be the bad guy, you have to have a British accent.
That's it.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
Khan
Noonien Singh tasks you to listen to his new podcast based on an audio story titled Star Trek : Khan. Based on a story by Star Trek II Wrath of Khan writer, director Nicholas Meyer, this 9-episode full-cast audio play covers the 20 years of exile of Khan on SETI Alpha 5. It features such cast members as Ren Schmidt, Sonia Cassidy, George Takei, Tim Russ, Nevin Andrews as Khan. The original plan for the story was a 3-part limited TV series, but budget constraints have since morphed it into an audio form. Episodes will appear on the usual podcast platforms, presumably with copious adverts, starting on the 8th of September and concluding on the 3rd of November.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard the trailer for that.
Have you? Oh,
yeah. There is trailers out, so I've heard that. It sounds intriguing.
But sadly, no Ricardo Montalban.
He's a bit difficult. A bit dead.
Yeah. I mean, they could get the Ouija board out, but you'd only hear the scraping of the glass.
They could AI him. But,
Highlander.
Dead.
Oh, dear. Reboot cast.
Oh, yeah.
There can only be 1 million Highlander films. The next of which is a full-on reboot that will star ousted Superman Henry Cavill as Connor MacLeod, ex-Drax the Destroyer, Dave Bautista as the Kurgan, and one-time gladiator Russell Crowe as Ramirez. John Wick director Chad Stahelski is helming the project for Amazon MGM and is expected to go before the cameras at the end of September.
It's interesting. I can see Cavill as MacLeod.
Yeah.
And I can just about see Barista as the Kurgan.
Yes.
I cannot see Russell Crowe as Ramirez. They will have to change the character. Yeah.
I have two addendums.
Oh, really? Okay.
Wow.
Two, count them. Ray Brooks.
Dead.
Oh, yes. Ray Brooks, voice of Mr. Ben, and also starred as David Campbell in Dalek Invasion of Earth 2150 AD.
The boy from Mac.
Has popped off. Aged 86.
Not bad innings at all.
That's not bad.
Right, he narrated Mr. Ben for anyone in the States and Australia, and that was required viewing when you were five in the 70s.
And as if by magic, the shopkeeper appeared.
Exactly. The Time Hotel in Doctor Who is bloody well based on Mr. Ben.
There is a reference to Mr. Ben.
There was a shop. In the background.
He was also, he got his break in Kathy Come Home.
Yes.
Blimey, which was as close to reality TV as you'd get there. Yeah. It was scripted. The whole thing was a drama.
Yeah.
But people would approach them in the streets, yelling at them for what they chose to do and what they had to do.
It was kind of almost like static cam, filmed as if real, and it was deliberately done to try and shake up some people's ideas about the child benefit and the benefit systems and homelessness and that kind of stuff in Britain.
I remember having to watch that at school as part of the humanities coursework.
Oh, okay. Gone by my time, I'm afraid.
Should I do the other one?
Second addendum is
Joan Maureen Biddy Baxter, MBE.
Dead.
Unfortunately, dead.
92. Wow. Damn fine.
Another good innings. Yeah. Yeah.
Blue Peter.
The creator, yeah. Blue Peter. Apparently, she was a very strong, erstwhile woman.
Yeah.
Yep. The era she was making TV, definitely. She had to
make. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then some, yeah.
She also, I mean, she didn't have any direct links to Doctor Who, but Blue Peter certainly did feature Doctor Who a lot.
Yeah.
Peter Post.
It's a seminal one of that era.
Yeah, and also, it's part of our childhood, so damn it, you lot are going to hear about it.
And also, it's on Ace's jacket.
Yep.
It is. The Blue Peter badge.
Yes, and that's a real Blue Peter badge. Yes. It's Sophie
yes,
Gull.
It is. Yeah.
And she was very strict about archiving the Blue Peter episodes, which is why some of the surviving Doctor Who clips, the original regeneration, survived.
Yeah, she had. She used to have a very good work ethic. In many respects, she was well ahead of her time in thinking of the programme's legacy, and she very much embraced that entertain, educate.
Mm. In the Venture of Space and Time, they say that Verity Lambert is the first female producer at BBC, but surely Biddy Baxter was there first. Okay, that's not a drama.
Mm. Biddy Baxter, first broadcast, Blue Peter first broadcast in 1958.
It was 58, yeah. Because it's coming up to 70 years old and it's still going.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And they've just announced that the latest Blue Peter presenter is a puppet.
Oh, yes. Not Ed the Duck or...
Gordon the Gopher.
No, Ed the Duck, we can't talk about him anymore.
Oh, okay.
You know why.
So you can't talk about Gordon the Gopher?
No, definitely not. Jesus, could you bleep out the name when you're editing this?
I lied there slightly. Blue Peter was first broadcast in 58. Biddy Baxter took it over as programme editor in 65.
Ah, so Verity Lambert. Okay. Any more addendums?
Nope. I'm still trying to imagine Russell Crowe as Ramirez.
Well, you do that quietly. That's the end of the news.
My name is Ramirez. Mentor to a Scottish.
Right. Several of us gathered round Shay Dunn recently to sup of cider and watch Star Trek
Bing.
Strange New Worlds.
Bing.
Pause for better Bing. Music.
Mm. Bong.
Surrounded by idiots.
Right, the Gorn are back, and this time they're meaner and nastier than ever.
It's part two of the cliffhanger that
hegemony
that we ended the last season almost 2 years ago.
Give or take a few weeks, 2 years between
Bloody
episodes one and two. Yeah.
And that's a long cliffhanger.
You could probably count the scenes without blood on the walls on one hand. Yeah.
After the red paint.
They did. Right, so you've got an away team stuck on the planet with a newly discovered Scotty.
Yeah.
Yes.
On the colony planet, Earth colony. But they are outside the Federation.
They are.
Mm.
You've got Gorn attacking the colony, sending their babies in first.
Pointy teeth.
And you've got the Enterprise up top.
Yeah, that has to stay on one side of a demarcation zone.
That the Gorn drew
after
attacking the colony.
And blowing up a Starfleet vessel.
And with Nurse Chapel on it.
With Nurse Chapel and Captain Patel.
Yeah, and Starfleet, because they have not a testicle between them, decided we have to honour this line that the enemy have drawn.
Yes, and Captain Patel, she's been infected by a Gorn hatchling. Yes.
Impregnated.
As we have found out in earlier Gorn episodes, is they reproduce by biting and implanting eggs.
Mm. Yeah.
A bit like that wasp, aren't they?
Ichimon
wasps, yes.
Yes.
Mm. What, the bitey planty wasp?
The bitey planty wasp.
But on the positive side, we do have a lovely new character, don't we? The young nurse in medbay.
Not yet, we don't.
Not in this one.
It's the next episode.
It's part two of Hodgman.
No. The one with...
Wedding Bells.
Oh, he appears in that one, does he?
Yes.
Okay, forget that sentence. That was a rubbish sentence.
You can edit that out.
No,
they,
you can.
They managed to save her from being gaunified.
Yeah, they've been, after a fashion.
They dissolved it.
At this point in time, they saved her from being gaunified.
They have been managed to beam her back to the Enterprise.
Yes.
With Chapel.
That's it.
But can we discuss this?
Okay, yes.
Can we discuss this?
Yes.
Now, Chapel had beamed up to the blown-up ship before it was blown up.
Yes.
Yep.
And she wasn't in Medbay, which was quite a relief, really, because that got disintegrated.
Yeah, Medbay isn't there anymore.
Now, Spock, they want to crash the what's left of the saucer section down onto this thing that's stopping them being able to beam down to the planet. So Spock's floated across to plant these
jets.
Yes. And he comes across Chapel. They find each other. She's alive and she's got a spacesuit on and everything. And it's wonderful. Woohoo! And so he gets her out of there and they get back to the Enterprise and they send the saucer section crashing down, not caring that there's no way in hell she was the only one who was still alive. There could have been hundreds of crew men and women there who were alive and they just crashed them into the planet without so much buy or leave. Simply because they weren't pretty and blonde and looked really good in a white jumpsuit.
No, it wasn't that. It wasn't
that. I think it was.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't that. They weren't in the opening titles.
Right.
If they, you know, because they weren't in the opening title sequence.
They're expendable.
They're expendable, yes.
You scare me sometimes.
Going back to Scotty, as I say, this version of Scotty, he seems, well, very unsure of himself. He's lacking self-confidence.
That's what I love. It is Scotty. He's there. He's the mechanical genius, because there's one brilliant scene that I'm going to come to. But he just doesn't have the confidence.
No.
There's one scene where he's trying to recreate this sort of semi-cloaking device that we managed to use to escape the Gorn on the shuttlecraft. And he's trying to recreate it for the Enterprise to use. And you have this scene with this sitting there with these massive goggles on, examining every piece of equipment, slowly clicking it in, and it doesn't work. And then Pelia rushes in and says, "The Gorn are coming! The Gorn are coming! They're going to kill us! They're going to kill us! We're all going to die!" And he just goes, "Oh God, click, 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 click." It works. So Scotty is there. He just doesn't have the confidence yet.
Yeah.
She knew that's what would happen. Yeah. She was his teacher or something. Exactly.
He just needed the right buttons pressed.
That's it. When he thinks about it, he can't do it. But if he just does it...
Yes,
he,
automatically.
You know, he's there.
Did anyone else think we were going to lose Ortegas in this one?
Yes.
There was an awful lot of blood came out of her.
A hell of a lot. There are certain characters here who have cannon armour. We can't hurt them because we know they're going to be the original series.
Which is why putting Chapel on the... We knew she wasn't going to die.
Yeah. But there is...
Which makes it even worse for those poor bastards who were alive then.
There is a couple of characters there that are Strange New Worlds exclusive.
Yeah.
And I'm not... Mm. When this show finishes, I'm not 100% sure they're going to make it out of here alive.
Yeah, because at one point her hand was getting digested, wasn't it?
Yeah, her hand was digested in this cocoon, so she only had two fingers. And then she was stabbed by a Gorn.
She got a hand inside her.
She did offer. She piloted them home. And every now and then you've got this shot of her blood
bleeding
filling up
all
the instrumentation. It's like, please don't kill her now. I really like her.
But remember, she's Ortegas.
She flies the ship.
She flies the ship.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a sort of catchphrase.
It is.
It's Ortega. She flies the ship.
I don't know if it's PTSD or something else, but she seems to have bought something home with her.
Wow. But this is it. This one,
she's part Gorn too.
This one seems to have, although we defeat the Gorn at this point, all eggs have assimilated, all Gorns are destroyed, everything else.
Everything happens.
Well, they all went home, didn't they?
Because that's right.
Yeah, they figured a way of actually tricking them. They have a hibernation cycle, and so they figured it out, did a little signal, and they went, "Oh, we will all go home and sleep." And we think, "Yay!" Yeah,
the best of both worlds.
But
but
they didn't seem to all go home to sleep. Some of them have stayed with the crew.
See, there is this theory, because, of course, Kirk comes across one of the crew later. Yeah.
Is a line I loved in it, is when they all go home to sleep. So we've done it, we've solved it, but I think I've
left a problem with someone else further down the line.
Yeah.
But the Gorn-Kirk fort was very human-like. It's almost like it was a man in a rubber suit.
Almost, yes.
Almost,
yeah. There are these theories flying around in Star Trek fandom, which are always awesome, in that we could add Ortega to it now.
Yeah.
Either Ortega or Patel is actually that Gorn, because the Gorn DNA becomes dominant and takes them over.
I mean, that's the thing what I like about the new Gorn. I mean, they're far more animal-like.
Oh, yeah.
I
mean,
they're just all teeth and viciousness.
Yeah. Oh, good grief, you know, bad attitude. Yeah.
A bit like our cat, really.
My tummy, I know. So, anyway, Nurse Chapel says, Spock, I love you, but I think we need time apart.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go off and find myself. It's okay, chaps. Don't stick by me. We can go and see other people. And then she comes back and Spock thinks, I'll make a romantic gesture. And she goes, here's my boyfriend. Yeah.
Bullets have left guns slower than that woman works.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so to say sort of Spock has been shot down in flames would be an understatement.
It's something we knew that was eventually going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because original series, you have Roger Corby in there, who was mentioned was her fiancé in Kirk's log. And she's one of the reasons why she signed back on to the Enterprise was to try to find him.
Yeah. Ah.
So that was already in place from 60 years ago.
Yeah. Now, this episode is based very much on the Squire of Gothos.
Oh, yes.
With her Trelane, yes.
Even the coat was the same.
And I have to say, the barman who is the main protagonist in it,
yes,
although he wasn't played by a certain actor who voices towards the end, I did sit there thinking, are you a variation on a certain character?
That's what we thought when we saw the two orbs of energy.
Yeah. That was something, again, which has always been in fandom, is the Phantom fan theories that have linked Trelane to the Q Continuum.
Yeah.
It's always been a junior Q.
Yeah.
So you don't want too many all-powerful god-like things running around, do you, really? No. Or to limit it to just...
It's never been officially confirmed by power.
Oh, I think it has now.
It isn't necessarily confirmed now. It's just very, very strongly hinted.
Oh, I think it's confirmed.
Yeah, who was his dad?
John DeLancey.
It was voiced. Yeah.
It was nice seeing Spock being so jealous but not emotional with it. Well played.
There was the occasional raising of an eyebrow.
Yes. Yeah, and then a punch.
Then the punch. Yes.
This one, Chapel and
Corby
are sort of like, isn't he sweet? Isn't she sweet?
They're in the lovey-dovey stage.
And they're in
the
lovey-dovey stage. And
just like you
Spock.
And me.
Spock is being emotionless and he's not being jealous in any way, shape, size, or form. No. And says something along the lines of, I wish
you all the best in life.
And they said, okay. And suddenly next thing he knows, he's waking up with her in bed with him. And she's going, oh, we can't see each other the day of our wedding.
Even though Vulcans have, Vulcans have emotions that just keep them under tight control.
Yeah.
Yeah, but once he decked him, he felt, that felt so good.
But Corby
is
getting the feeling from the very off start that things aren't right. Well, so everyone thinks that this wedding is they've been going out for years, the wedding's due to happen, everyone's on board. And Corby is the one, because he's kind of like the third wheel in the story.
Yeah, like Corby to this version of Trelane is like Picard is to Q. It's all centred around him, and it's a big finger to him. So he's the only one, Corby is the only one who knows exactly what's going on. Mm. He hasn't been included in the illusion.
Yes, and the sight of Corby dressed as a bridesmaid. I mean,
when he tries to speak up.
Wasn't that blue pastel dinner jacket? Or what would you call it?
And the wreath.
It was straight out of Dumb and Dumber. It's one of the characters it's what one of the characters wears in Dumb and Dumber when they're going to a posh restaurant.
Spock is improving his dancing. He's born dancing.
Oh, he has a lot of that this season.
Yes.
In fact, Spock's is beginning around half the crew, I think.
Yeah. We'll get into that later.
Not in that sense.
Method.
Yeah. So I don't know whether you noticed, but right at the beginning, after the drinks at the bar, but before he wakes up with Chapel, there was a figure outside his quarters window.
Yes.
Framed in the light.
Yeah. I did think it's quite sad with this one, because obviously Colby decks Spock. Spock suddenly remembers
strong emotions.
That this is all wrong. Mm-hmm. But he still has to go through the wedding, and his part of his vows is to actually remind Chapel who she should be marrying.
Oh, he's completely honourable.
Oh, yeah, completely honourable. Sometimes... But he recites the poem in such a way you can... I thought the acting was good because you could tell he's being emotionless.
Yeah.
And it was so emotional at the same time.
Emotionally emotionless.
Yeah.
As sometimes love expresses itself by sacrifice, by giving things away.
Aww. And then we went on to the less lovey-dovey one. Shuttle Kenfori.
Oh, the Klingon one.
Yes.
The one that we didn't all see coming as soon as they landed.
Shuttle to Kenfori. Kenfori, I've only found this out recently, Kenfori is a name of one of the actors who's appeared in nearly all of the Day of the Dead films.
Oh, really? That makes sense.
Yeah, it does turn into a bit of a zombie thing fairly quickly, doesn't it?
So basically, to save...
Captain Patel is... how can put slipped back, relapsed.
Yes.
The Gorn is sort of reinfecting her. Yeah.
So they found that there is one thing that might help, which is the Chimera flower,
which can only be found on this one planet.
Yeah, which is in neutral territory after the Klingons and the
demilitarized zone.
What could possibly go wrong?
They land there, and the first thing they go is there's only plant life. There is no animals. There's only plant life. Everyone who's watched Space 1999 was going,
zombies.
Okay, so we know what's coming here. Yeah. The plant life has killed all the animals.
Not Brian the Brain.
Not this is crinoids. This is Space 1999. I mean, the whole beginning bit was Space 1999. And then it turned a bit, oh, God. The Walking Dead. Because it's a fungi that's done it.
Oh, Last of Us, then.
The Last of Us.
Yeah, it was the fungus.
But you also had the Day of the Dead in there with the zombies.
Yep, you had every zombie film going in there.
One thing I do like about Strange New Worlds is they've retained the forehead Klingons.
The uniforms seemed a bit...
The uniforms are more of a cross between the original series uniform and the later film version. Yes. It's a cross.
And they've got the original Klingon D7 battle cruisers.
I was going to say, with these particular Klingons in this one, these three Klingons, they might not have had formal uniforms on because they weren't there formally.
No.
They were there on... Well, one of them was there on a headhunt for the Doctor.
Going back to wonderful fan theories, there is a wonderful fan theory that's floating around to discuss the differences between the Discovery Klingons and these Klingons and the film Klingons.
Right.
Back in Enterprise, the smooth-headed Klingons was the result of an augmented virus that was used in human DNA.
Okay.
The theory is that there's some Klingon scientists tried to get it back to what the Klingon should be and went too far.
Okay.
Ah. So they overloaded on certain chemical and genetic factors, and you get the Discovery Klingons.
I thought Discovery tried to backtrack by having different clans, and some of them looked more like
that's what officially has done. But I prefer the fan theories that they've overdone the genetic manipulation.
Well, what was it that Worf said in the episode of DS9?
We don't like to talk about.
We don't like to talk about it.
I don't think there's enough mad scientists in this world.
No.
This one was more centred around Mbang.
Mbenga. What I love about this is the fact that you've got Patel going down, so it's obviously a medical story. No, we've got zombies running around, so it's obviously a zombie story. Mm-hmm. But it's not. All that takes in a back seat, and we have
the
Klingon daughter and Mbenga, and it's a form of revenge story.
It is.
So all that is just a setup for this.
Yeah. Because if you're a fan of zombie films, pretty got more out of it than I did.
Yeah.
But for me, it's probably the weakest of the ones so
Agreed.
Far.
So far, it's been my least favourite, yeah. and I've still enjoyed it.
That is not doing it down.
No.
Yeah. It's a good episode. But like I said, in a strong season, it's been the weakest of
I mean,
the lot so
that's
far.
One thing I like about this series. I mean, they're definitely fleshing out all the characters.
Obviously,
Dr. Mbenga, he was in the Klingon Wars.
Yes. And well, it's harking back to an episode that was in the second season, I think.
Yes. That was the flashback.
Yeah,
one.
The flashback where the Klingon
the
ambassador.
Episode.
That's right. Yeah.
When he killed, or when he killed the Klingon.
When he actually killed the Klingon ambassador. Yeah.
Which takes us on to
our next story.
Not quite, because we have things going on aboard ship with Ortega.
Mm. Yes, we do.
Yeah. Disobeys. Yeah, disobeys orders. Yes. It's a beautiful flight sequence, but to do that flight sequence, she had to deliberately disobeyed orders.
Yeah, she seems to be going a bit
off the rails.
More flaky than normal.
Yeah, because she, as you said, suggested at the time, seems to be suffering a lot from PTSD.
Yeah, PTSD,
But then we go on to
the best Shatner impression I've ever seen in my life.
I wasn't sure what was going on when the episode first started.
I was too busy laughing.
I loved the opening, the cold opening.
Like Adam said, the opening sequence of this was just
the wobbly sets and the short skirts.
It was so obvious that it was original check.
Even the light beams.
Across
the beam of the light, across the eyes.
Very well.
Dramatic.
And the strange staccato speech.
Yes, he was so ribbing off Shatner.
He was, the guy who plays the new Kirk.
Yeah,
Lieutenant.
Basically playing Shatner.
Yeah.
In a holodeck. Well, in a program within a program in the holodeck.
Yeah. The last frontier.
We don't know at this point, because it literally starts off with a rip-off of
the original
Star Trek.
It was like Galaxy Quest.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get teaser and opening titles.
Yeah.
And then it turns out they're going to try and launch what we now call a holodeck.
Yes.
And so I love the fact that a couple of fanboys have been up in arms. They didn't have a holodeck until Next Generation. It shouldn't be there. It's breaking canon.
Try and watch it to the end, and you'll know they still don't.
Well, I don't know, the cartoon series. Occasionally the cartoon series is canon, and sometimes it's not, but they had a recreation deck in the cartoon series.
Is that the original cartoon series?
The original cartoon. I think it was the episode called Joker, where the computer goes off the rails, surprisingly.
Also, we didn't start off with a digital watch. We started off with a sundial. At some point you have something before the finished version. So, on this one, they are trying out... What were they to become? The holodeck.
Yay.
It's a holographic simulator to help people have exercise and recreation on the long flights, etc.
Yeah, I think they call it a recreation deck.
They do nickname it holodeck.
This episode is a clear tip of the hat to the Dixon Hill adventures.
So La'an is asked to try this out, do your best. Push it to its limits.
Yep.
So she has a series of books, that murder mystery books that she really likes, and create murder mystery suitable for me to solve. This is where it ties into the Star Trek thing.
Oh.
Because it turns out the victims and all the characters in this murder mystery were the actors and director of this Star Trek ripoff.
Yes. What sort of springs to mind is the episode Elementary, My Dear Data. Where he says a problem that only Data could solve, not Sherlock Holmes.
They learn nothing in the 100-odd years, whatever it is, between now and next gen. Yeah, all of the classic holodeck problems are here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Does the health and safety protocols ever work on the holodeck?
No. If they're going to fail, you think they'd fail in the first iteration. So understand why people get locked in, they can't communicate with the ship, the safety features are off.
Yep.
All the problems.
And because it's new, they can only use likenesses of people that have already used the teleportation system. Yeah. So, of course, all the cast,
all the crew.
James T. Kirk apparently appears, even though he's off somewhere at Lexington or somewhere else.
Gene, as I've heard that, and Scott, Mbenga, good-looking man.
I think he's
much better looking without the fro.
Yeah.
He has a full-on afro.
I think he's a much better looking man without it.
I think he's a very good actor. I think he just can't do an English accent.
No, God, no. No, it was not quite Dick Van Dyke like in its.
Well, the nurse, Nurse Chapel, she put on a convincing
English.
No, yeah. No, she was Australian.
She's Australian. That was an Australian accent.
That was her own accent.
That's her own accent.
It's just Australian is closer to English.
The amount of times I've been thought when we were in States that they thought I was Australian.
Yeah, we were in a lift and some people thought we were Australian.
But the nice thing with this one is, so she comes in and there's a murder and she solves it.
Yeah.
But then there's another murder.
Yep.
Because the holodeck, she said, test me to my limits.
Yeah.
So it does.
So it does.
But while it's doing that, it's also pulling in more and more computer power and energy off of other tasks on the ship.
And meanwhile, the rest of the ship really needs that energy.
Immediately in danger.
Is going to hell in a handcart.
Yeah, because it's meant to be tested in real life conditions. So the Enterprise itself is on a particular survey mission. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This looked like it was basically playtime for the cast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Much fun.
I can tell they had a lot of fun with it.
I think Anson Mount had a lot of fun with his
director,
writer.
He studied Gene Roddenberry.
Yes.
Apparently. That was meant to be Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Frakes, Jonathan Frakes directed this one back in next year. Yeah. He knew Gene Roddenberry and he found some old footage to show Anson Mount how he acted in real life. So, yeah.
I have to say, it really struck me as a kind of love letter to Star Trek fans.
Even, to the creation of Star Trek.
Even the holodeck characters, I can't remember her name, the first one to be poisoned, Lucille Ball.
Lucille. I assume that was,
I really enjoyed this episode.
I liked also when Kirk character tries to do the Riker manoeuvre over the over the captain's chair and knocks all the sides of the chair off. It's just an office chair on wheels on the inside.
And I think my favourite line was, "So, Lee, what killed him? I'm an actor, not a doctor."
And before you get to the end of it, it's all saved and we have some end credits.
Yes.
Kind of outtakes.
The blooper reel.
Bloopers, but the things like walking into the door because I haven't actually opened the door because it doesn't slide.
The things that happened on the real Star Trek.
All the doors fail to open.
Yeah. If you've ever seen an original Star Trek blooper reel, that is basically
a lot. The poor person dressed up as the alien can't see where they're going and falling over the furniture and that kind of stuff.
And only wearing the costume from the waist up.
Yeah. Trying to do the Riker manoeuvre.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Frakes is there, Derek. Jonathan.
Well, it's the same with those original scientists.
Yeah, like
Doug Quaid.
Then we move to the last one that's been aired so far.
Yes.
Okay, I've not seen this one. So.
I haven't seen this one yet.
You have?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yes, you have.
Through the lens of time.
The nice lens turns
I have seen that one.
Yes.
Shall we cover this one if you haven't seen it?
No, we won't cover this one because it's... Scott hasn't seen.
No, I haven't seen it.
The next one, we then go on through to The Lens of Time, which is a very interesting one, and it starts to reinforce the idea that the Gorn may not quite have gone as far as you think they have, because they have a little visionary guest appearance on the other occasion.
There is also...
That was terrible.
Yeah,
that's why I ignored it.
It is very Cthulhu-esque things from beyond time.
With a bit of chucking a bit of the mummy in Indiana Jones.
It had very, very strong Doctor Who vibes.
I get the feeling that it's almost like the Gorn is the first half of the season. Mm-hmm. This one, I get the feeling, is going to lead us on to the next few stories. Mm. But the two are definitely going to meet somewhere along the lines at the end.
And a bad thing happens in this, doesn't it?
It does, a very bad thing.
It does. Mm. There's someone who I really, really liked.
You were saying when...
Straight away, as soon as we met him.
The initial thing happened, or even before the initial... He's dead.
Oh, okay.
Well, gone but not forgotten.
Does Spock hook up with anybody else in this one? Did he get three more of the crew?
He does shag a lieutenant from L Deck.
Okay.
But they don't really focus on that.
Is this the one where he does the Tango.
No, that was the last one.
Yeah.
The previous one, yeah.
So this one, I think it was called The Cowgirl, is what they did.
Okay.
Yeah. Position.
So, I mean...
Thoughts overall?
I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Oh, yeah, blimey, definitely.
Like,
yeah.
Like the way that they do, like Doctor Who does nowadays, they change it up every episode, yeah. Different tone, different
it's
type
all,
of story.
Almost switchback, because we've got horror comedy. Horror comedy. So it's been switching
this,
backwards and forwards.
This is, I must admit, this is much more how... This is the old-fashioned way of having a series. This is how I like my series is. That you can have a theme through it, like the Gorn in this case, or what have you, but it isn't the driver in a very obvious way.
You can have lots of individual stories.
So that's how I prefer it. Yeah, you can pick one up and put one down and enjoy it on its own and go, oh yeah, the Gorn was in that one, but it doesn't disturb you or anything because you haven't got to follow the whole
thing. There's a place for both, like Stranger Things. If that were just one-off stories, that wouldn't be the
Well, it's a completely different beast.
Exactly. Yeah. So
there are room for both beasts.
If you've... It depends on what the kind of story is. So things like Babylon 5, I think things like Star Trek, Babylon 5, Doctor Who, where you are going from point to point, it's more sense that as you go from point to point, different. You travel around the world, the planet is different, the different parts of the planet you go, the food is different, the people are different. If you stay in your high school, if you stay in your town, things are constant. So you can sign, but you've got people coming and going. That's a junction point. It makes sense that your story is centred there. So it works in different ways for different kind of things.
One thing I have noticed, this entire series is a lot gorier than previous.
Oh, good. You almost need the comedy episodes
to break it out.
There's an incident with some eyes in this episode.
And, oh, my God.
And the zombie one, she stamped on one of the heads.
She did. And, of course, of the melted hand and arm.
Yeah.
But the thing with the eyes was just like, ooh.
I do like with this scene, Scotty and Spock and Nurse Chapel. And you, as you say, you can see who they are. And if we think what we were like, I know they're older, but at 24, 26, and think how we are now, how much different we are. The same people, but totally different.
Oh, blimey, yeah.
And I think it is that, you know, as you say, Scotty's very young. He's only... got out of academy and that kind of stuff. He's a genius, but he hasn't got the confidence of his genius yet.
Life forges you into different people, even though you're the same person.
It has, in my mind, completely redeemed Chapel.
Mm.
No disrespect to Marjorie Barrett, it was the 60s writings, but she was a very...
One-dimensional,
wimpy character who was constantly seemed to be lovelorn. But now you've got justification for that, those actions to a certain extent. The character is slightly different. She's more powerful, in command, and knows her destiny, but it still has links into what's going to happen.
Uhura. Because the Uhura I know is a very, very strong, no-nonsense woman.
Yeah.
She was more than just the telephonist, as we know.
Yeah. This one's still quite junior.
She's not quite junior.
She was an ensign to start with, wasn't she?
No, she was a cadet.
She was a cadet. So like we just said, she's just a baby.
Yeah.
And she learns and finds herself.
That is one of the defining traits that the woman from Lower Decks...
Mariner?
Yes, Mariner. Uhura was her hero because Uhura knew how to have fun. And then she gets there and there is this Uhura who has to study this book, has got to complete that, and is very work-orientated.
That's how you get ahead in that world.
And again, she was back. She wasn't only an ensign at that point.
Right, thoroughly enjoyable series.
I'm really looking forward to the rest of it.
I love the original Star Trek. I love this because it reminds me so much of the original Star Trek, I think. It's got the same kind of bit of quirky humour. It hasn't got the same level of sexism.
Definitely more violence.
It's definitely more violent. But yeah, I think if you really like the original Trek and okay about some of the rest of it, but not overly big fan, you would still then enjoy this, I think, more than some of the others.
But Pike doesn't get into enough fist fights, though, does he?
No.
No, he really doesn't.
He doesn't get his shirt torn.
It's something I was mentioning to Karen the other day. It's something to do with how television was made between the 60s and now, guides how the captains are. Original Trek, all the revolutionary decisions that used to get them out of the plot holes was solely down to Kirk. This one, as you've got Pike standing in the middle of the bridge, right, come on, I need ideas. People suggest things. Yeah.
Well, like Next Gen was.
Yeah, well, Next Gen, no, they would have gone off to the briefing room.
Yes.
You know, they wouldn't have stood there in the middle of things exploding, say, I need suggestions. They'd have all toddled off to the briefing room, sat down and had a meeting.
Chat about it.
Yeah.
Bit of a calmer place. Yeah.
I think the only reason sort of Captain Pike would hit somebody if he got his hair muzzed up.
It's that way society's gone from the boss.
Yeah.
Everyone has their ideas, but it's the boss who succeeds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To the boss being the one that enables the people below them to have the ideas.
Yeah.
And to take credit for them, so to speak.
And to decide what ideas to use.
Yeah, which is the way it should be.
Yeah.
He was compensating with a glittery gold spacesuit, though, wasn't he? That whole time with the Gorn.
Okay, we'd love to know what you're thinking of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Woo!
Oh, time for some birthday cake, because Crumbly is very old today.
I am very old, yes.
You deserve num, cake. Num.
61 today, 61 today. He's got the key of the door but can't remember where he put it. 61 today. Love cake.
Cake.
Yep.
Cake.
Everybody cake.
What flavour cake is it?
Chocolate.
Chocolate cake or chocolate cake?
Oh, chocolate cake.
Chocolate cake.
You'd have thought by 61 he'd have grown up and not be doing this kind of silly stuff, wouldn't you?
No.
So, dear listener, we have just stuffed ourselves with chocolate cake.
Cake.
It's yummy. Delicious. Thank you, Crumbly.
Crumbly's
84th birthday.
Yes.
A slight increase from the last.
Time does fly.
We're talking of flying time.
Oh.
Oh, very good.
We've also been listening to someone flying through time.
Could it be Doctor Who? Pause for music.
The Fugitive Doctor.
Why are you whispering? It doesn't pick it up if you whisper.
It's not whispering.
Disgusting. For you, it's whispering. You could out-yell Big Ben when it's in a particularly aggressive mood. Brian Blessed comes to you for lessons in production of voices.
Not production.
Production. It's like projection, but not quite.
But spelled differently.
These two are very close friends.
Love you, sweetie.
We've been listening to Big Finish, Doctor Who, The Fugitive Doctor, Dead or Alive.
Ooh,
there's a few colons in there somewhere.
Yeah. Only one colon, two colons. What's a colon or two between friends?
It's vitally important if you need to go to the toilet.
So this is three stories.
It is.
One box set.
One box set.
Yep.
It's the Doctor on the run from Cosmogon.
Yes. Now, I haven't heard the first one. I kind of know her as Ruth.
Indeed.
So yes. How did we establish she's the Doctor, or... Is he just canon?
It just started.
It's just assuming.
This is just in the past.
Yeah.
Before, presumably, it's got to be pretty much before that point.
Because I know she didn't use the name Doctor in the series,
It doesn't really matter.
Oh, it doesn't finish, just, but I'm just wondering if it had been explained to sort it for the first one.
You're trying to sort it for your own head.
Yes.
It's just the Doctor, and it just started. And she, in the first box set, she was chased by what I'm assuming is another Time Lord, Cosmogon. But it didn't actually make
that clear.
Yeah, she's an agent for Division.
The Division. She has access to a TARDIS.
Mm. Yeah. So I'm sure she's a Time Lord.
Yeah.
And box set number two picks up where box set number one left off.
Oh, yes.
But as someone who hasn't heard box set number one, that is not a problem because I thoroughly enjoyed this without hearing box set number one.
Yeah. It's Chase.
You don't have to. To hear box set number one.
There were the three episodes. I enjoyed them all, but the first one was my least favourite.
Yes.
Okay. And they got better. The third one I thought was excellent.
Yes.
The third one was my favourite, even though it was a little bit confusing, but that's also because I quite like the Tom Baker story that kind of ties in with this one.
Yeah. The first one I didn't particularly like, but you know, this is for reasons I will go into.
The first one was okay, but it was just, it was someone stuck in a plane.
Yeah.
Trying to land for 70
the
minutes.
The first one is called Flying Solo, and it starts off in the Second World War with an Indian pilot who's being told off for being
Mahinda,
basically
for being brown.
Yeah.
It is the weakest of the three stories. There is so much potential here, but it's more like a soup. We've only got a faint taste of what could be. To make the story better, they should have landed, they should have taken part in events that we're just glossing over.
You don't really have time to get into any additional characters, do you? Because they just keep travelling to the next point in time.
It's like listening to a phone conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
A good phone conversation, but a phone conversation nonetheless.
It seems fair appropriate for the Whitaker era, though.
Yeah, yes. I'm not denying that.
Themes of the Punjab and stuff like that. Mm. This is talking about Indian history.
I'm not denying that. It's just
we don't know much about.
It's a history that isn't necessarily taught in schools or wasn't taught when I went to school.
Well, it wasn't when I was at school because it, quite frankly, shows a side of the British Empire that makes us look like total tossers, we were.
Yes. Well, I would beg to differ.
Differ away, young man, differ away.
No, it's like all empires. I mean, you can't discuss them in black and white. They have to be discussed in shades of grey.
Yeah, agreed.
No, it's just the bits where, he said he was looking for adventure, so why did he sign up to be a Spitfire pilot when he was showing some anti-British Empire sentiment? The scene where he's talking about sepoys and Gurkhas being just attack dogs of the British Empire, I mean, I don't agree with that whatsoever. So.
Yeah, but he was speaking from his point of view, they said they'd found all that literature in his locker, so he's clearly been reading up on a certain side of things.
A certain side of things,
that
yes.
That is colouring his outlook.
Oh,
but
yeah.
if you spoke to nine Indian blokes back then, they'd probably say the same thing about the Gurkhas. Mm. Whereas if you spoke to nine British men back then, they'd know that the Gurkhas, quite frankly, we couldn't have done anything without them.
Oh, very much so. And, I mean, the thing was, where he was talking about his parents and they said, oh, this isn't our war. I mean, the thing is, I mean, if Japan had invaded India, it would have been very much their war. So.
But there's also, the Americans didn't want to get involved because it wasn't their war. Mm-hmm. And it was only because of Pearl Harbor. Mm. Oh, yeah. And even they didn't really want to get involved.
Well, at that time, America was having sort of very strong isolationist views.
But basically, unless Hitler or Germany or Japan, as it was on your doorstep going, we are going to take you over, we're doing the same as well ourselves at certain conflicts around the world that could have an implication on us.
World
but
War
because
II,
they're
I think,
not
didn't
here.
We,
it took us a while to get involved.
Anyway, the history lesson's over.
The final word I have to say is, history is never a thing to be proud of. Mm-hmm. History is not a thing to wave around. History is a thing to be better than.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
We have to be better than what we want.
To learn from our mistakes.
Yes.
Yeah. So this one was quite interesting because you've got our hero, who's basically a RAF pilot, and he gets caught up in
Time Eddie.
Mm. Yeah, basically.
In the wash.
In the wash. Yeah. We meet Alexander the Great at one point. And he goes through different points in time, but it very quickly becomes apparent it's point in his time, as we say. It's mainly
his ancestors'
Indian history. Some of them I knew as soon as I was saying certain places. I thought, oh, okay, I know what's going on with this one and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I did find it quite interesting, as you say, that idea between the empire idea and the different perspective from the people that aren't in the empire that have been occupied by the empire. But it was bitty.
Yeah.
It was meant to be bitty because he's jumping through time. Mm. But even ignoring that, it felt like a bitty story.
Yeah, it could have been more than it was.
To my mind, this story could have been a box set in itself. Mm. We could have got into it more. Yeah. The way it's set up is just a light glossing over and, for me, unsatisfactory.
I think it was okay. I liked the idea of what they were trying to do, but if we go back to something like Demons of Punjab, that involved you. You wanted the characters to turn out okay.
Yeah.
You had stakes here. You didn't really.
It's just something's going on down there.
You didn't spend long enough in each time zone. But what I did like was that Mohinder, our RAF pirate.
There's an argument for that as well.
The doctor was explaining to him, he pretty quickly clicked on. Mm. It wasn't like the initial, what the heck's happening? But then it's like, okay, I see what's happening. And he started to try and take control of the situation he was in.
Yeah,
rather than panic and have the situation happen around him.
He initially blames the doctor, doesn't he? The doctor's TARDIS has caused the problem. And then by the end, he saves her.
Yes, which I really liked, the ending bit, where he's figured out how he can unchain her from her captor.
You say time, Eddie. I say time flight.
Yeah.
It's better than that, surely.
But I think it was an interesting idea. And say it was an interesting potted history of the British Empire, and it was a bit too bitty.
What was next?
We then went on to the Junkyard Loop.
This is actually my least favourite of the three. I listened to all of them twice.
Yeah.
This is the one that I remembered the least when I came to listen to it the second time.
Right.
Mm. So Doctor is alerted to an off-the-grid junkyard by effectively a distress box type thingy.
Yeah, memory cube thing, isn't it?
By an old friend that she had abandoned somewhere.
Even though
she can't remember abandoning them.
This is very much a junkyard for time travel machines.
Yeah, it's, again, it's a lot of...
Doctor's wife.
Thank you. The Doctor's wife was in this, which was quite familiar.
Yes.
What I do like about it is, one, it introduces another villain, a slightly more villainous villain.
Yep.
As in the Division Commander.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah. Yep.
And also, it introduces a question mark, as in
the grey man.
The man in the grey suit.
General Lasker.
I got to admit, initially, you have, what is it, the time freeze creatures.
Time frost parasite.
Thank you, time frost parasite. I thought the assistant, the friend who was there, initially, I thought she'd already been gotten by the time frost parasite. She was merely a memory.
Yes,
Sidalis. Yeah, Sidalis, thank you.
I didn't trust her from the moment we met her, I have to say. You know, sometimes when there's a character comes into a story and you're sitting there going,
yeah, don't know. You're a vulgar.
It sounded like she had a major axe to grind with the Doctor anyway.
Yeah.
Well, for being abandoned.
For being abandoned.
Even though the Doctor can't remember abandoning her.
There was a mission, it seems like there was a mission previously where they had to split ways and the Doctor said, I'll get back to you, I'll find you. And unfortunately...
in 5 minutes.
And unfortunately had her mind wiped.
Yeah.
Since then, so she doesn't remember her at all.
Yeah.
Mm. I enjoyed this one. It's not my favourite. There's a lot of running around, and there is a lot of there's more happening in this one than there was the first one. It's got more of a meat on the bones.
Mm. Feels a bit more linear.
Mm. Yeah.
Despite the frost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Frost.
The nice little flashbacks, and you get the I can't remember his name, but you get the feeling the commander is someone who's doing off-the-book operations and has been promoted far too soon.
Well, he's definitely overstepping the mark on
And that actually, it puts Cosmogon's nose out of joint, because he just arrives in and takes over.
He almost makes her seem good at one point.
Yes!
doesn't he?
Introduces the man in the grey suit.
Mm. Yes, he wants to know who the man in the grey suit is.
And unfortunately, the Doctor hasn't a frigging clue who he's talking about. Mind wipe!
Yeah, this entire box set is really about getting Cosmogon to feel like a...
more of a character.
...better person. Mm. Yes. Yeah. I've never really seen it, but I assume this is riffing heavily on The Fugitive, the TV series.
Could be.
Because there you had, obviously, your innocent guy.
Yeah.
The one-armed man.
Kimball being chased by an agent.
Richard Kimball.
And presumably over the course of the series, the agent realised he's actually a good guy.
Yeah.
This Kimball. And the same thing happening here, really.
It's beginning to sort of readdress the relationship between Cosmogon and the Doctor.
Yeah.
I found with this one, the first one to me was interesting, but it was a bit bitty. This one, to me, I kind of lost track of what was going on. A bit, yeah. It really nothing was much, running from point A to point B.
Much did happen,
and nothing much happened. And I couldn't even picture it in my head, if you know what I mean. It was so.
I lost it a couple of places with the time frost.
Yeah,
that was it. When they started going off on like memories and things like that, I wasn't concentrating. I have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah. It was one. It's one that I think would have worked better visually than it did audially. The audio clues or triggers were too similar throughout for me, so they kind of blurred. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and visually it would have been nice to see the junkyard, because they're mentioning there's all different types of species time ships.
Yeah,
as
it's,
well.
it's not just TARDISes there, it's other time vehicles.
Yeah, and they go into one TARDIS, which has had the same thing happened in the Doctor's Wife.
Yes. No.
Wedding of River Song.
No.
No, it was the name of that episode.
Name.
The name of the Doctor, thank you. Mm-hmm. Where the TARDIS embiggens.
Yeah. Size escape.
Yeah, the interior dimensions leak out, which is quite a nice callback.
I didn't actually get any of that. I followed this perfectly well and had no problems in following it. It all made perfect sense. I understood when the memories flash were echoing in. But what I did like is perhaps the first introduction of the sonic screwdriver.
Yes, that was quite nice.
Yeah.
Sonic toolbox
the
all
sonic
around,
toolbox,
wasn't it?
Sonic toolbox,
Stardust or whatever had a sonic toolkit, yes.
Yeah.
Now the question is, Dr. Nicked it?
Yeah.
And the third one, my favourite one of these.
Yeah, I think probably the better of them.
Yes.
Hereafter, Cosmo has basically got the Doctor in handcuffs.
Yep.
Literally.
Mm. Yep.
Kinky knights.
No, bracelets, remember the fashion bracelets?
No. But they've somehow ended up stranded on a planet, and they're both getting very weird feelings about it.
Yeah.
It took me a moment because you've got intercut between Cosmo and the Doctor. You've got a young woman and someone who's her father, and it's the same voice as the actress playing Cosmo, because it is the same character, it's younger.
It's but Cosmonaut.
It took a moment to sort of like twig what was happening.
Yeah.
If she'd hired her voice slightly, so they weren't quite so close, it might have made the
I had no
better.
Problem with that. I thought I realised quite immediately that this was a younger version.
Yeah. I didn't, and I think the recording before, I'd been fooled with Jodie Whittaker's first audio with a couple of the female actors sounding very similar.
Yeah.
So I just switched off, and it wasn't until I heard the name Cosmo and Cosmodor. Right, okay.
Yeah, talking of that Jodie Whittaker box set we reviewed recently, it's vampires again.
Yes.
There's a thing going on at Big Finish at the moment with the vampires, I don't know why.
And that one also linked in with the great vampires of the war.
Yeah.
Well, the vampire in this knows the great vampire personally.
Personal friends.
Before it went missing.
But I like the way that by the end of this, they're not friends, but they're not quite as enemies.
Yeah, they're
as
not
they
enemies
were.
Anymore.
And she gives the Doctor a decent head start to get running again.
Yeah, it's difficult because her father approves of the Doctor saving Cosmonaut's life, doesn't it?
It's arcs back to the Dark Times with all the vampires, but also various Time Lord super weapons. It's meant to be in the Omega Vault, if I remember rightly.
It just makes me think about the Doctor's timeline, because the implication here is, at this point, the Ancients of Gallifrey,
The Division,
the first Time Lords, the ones who created all these great weapons, were millions of years, potentially, in the past.
Yeah.
The Doctor was there, though.
Yeah.
Has she lived for millions of years by this point?
Well, presumably. She just back.
I don't know.
It depends how many times she's had her mind wiped, doesn't it?
Well, at least twice, I think, by this point.
Well, given that she's supposed to have been the precursor to all the Time Lords, she had to have been around before the Ancients. Because they wouldn't have existed without her.
Well, certainly in one of the scenes from the 13 series, you had three Time Lords walking down a corridor in the regalia.
Yep.
Reading the script pointers, I think it was in the magazine, that was meant to be Rassilon, Omega, and the other.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. The other was the new adventures.
Yeah,
wasn't
the other was obviously the Doctor.
Yeah.
I like this story because it has the vampires in it. Mm-hmm. For me, this was much more of a linear story. This was much more of a story, whereas the others were a little bit more rambling. I just enjoyed, even though this did have cutbacks to a
being and father. Quite a few stuff. Flashbacks in this.
Yeah. Love their flashbacks.
I do like that. I'm not sure how I feel about the... Well, I've reconciled the timeless child in my own mind. I love her version of the doctor.
Oh, yeah.
The future doctor.
Slightly annoyed.
She seems to be borderline pissed off half the time.
No disrespect to Jodie. I would have preferred this version, a doctor like this. I would have... She's more doctor than the Jodie's doctor.
I don't think that would be possible simply because... I understand what you're saying, but simply because for Jodie to be the first female doctor, she had to be likeable.
Yeah.
Because some people would never accept her anyway, and some people still haven't. She had to be likeable.
Taking away the real world and people and their prejudices and all the rest of it, she's more the doctor.
If I was a
Cyberman or a Dalek or an alien who didn't have human prejudices about black actors and
I'd be more afraid
females
of
and all the rest
Joan
of it
than Jodie.
Oh yeah,
this would be more what I think that if she's... I'd seen her and Jodie, I'd have gone, "Oh, that's the Doctor."
She's more of a sixth Doctor, 12th Doctor.
Yes, definitely.
Yes,
so that prickly personality.
Yeah, yes. I'm not sure that works too well on TV.
Yeah,
no.
At least for the general public.
Yeah.
No. We'll look at Collins' first couple of episodes.
Yeah, and even Capaldi.
Yeah.
He struggled to connect with the audience, the general audience. I know he's very up there with the fans, but...
Yeah, but the grumpiness.
From a fan point of view, she's more doctorish.
Yeah. You get different styles of Doctor. Yeah. I prefer the Jodie Whittaker, Matt Smith style of Doctor.
See, I'm much more Tom Baker,
Peter Davis. And that sort of thing.
I'm much more Patrick Trout and Sylvester McCoy.
Yeah, the Doctor. I say they're not too dissimilar to.
Yeah, but it's. I prefer the Doctor who doesn't come in and take charge. I prefer the Doctor that just pokes the things into position.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd probably put Whittaker amongst that group in many ways. But anyway.
I was
very much Colin Baker and Peter Capaldi.
I'm not knocking them. I thought Capaldi was brilliant, but as you say, as a fan...
So overall, would we recommend this box set?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Definitely.
Both box sets, quite frankly.
Yes.
It's good continuation. I like the way it ends with Cosmonaut being almost sort of a warmer character. Yeah. It changes the dynamic going forward. Yeah,
she's going to stay with her dad until it's time for him to go, and then she's after her again.
I really thought they were going to recast her because she was dead.
Yes, she was. Mm. Yes. She got drowned at one point.
Yeah.
She gets killed in this one as well.
Well,
is this a running theme? We kill her.
She regenerates in this one, but like David Tennant, she's got a bit of vanity.
The regeneration didn't go into it, was just the reset rather than the full bodily.
And was that the White Guardian, or is it just a guardian?
I think it's
I know, but it was also a guardian.
Yeah, I think it was a guardian. The father imprinted his personality into the ring to protect.
Same name, different concept.
Yeah, different concept. Yeah.
Okay, if you've listened to any of The Fugitive Doctor and Big Finish, please write to us and tell us what you thought about it via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
Oh, speaking of various regenerations of the Doctor.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, we'll get you in earlier next time, we promise.
Hello, Head of Pertwee.
Hello, Dinky McSquirtle.
Dinky McSquirtle.
Head.
Dave Zilla the Mighty.
Oh yes.
Handles.
Terence
the Green. Various nebulas.
Dangerous Churchill, Nazi Spock.
Folded up and propped against the radiator behind the air conditioner, Clara.
With the orange glow.
And
white villainous pussycat.
Oh, evil cat.
And goats. Not forgetting the goats.
The goats.
Right, people, we've heard from Jay.
Hello, Jay!
Jay says, "Hello there, team. Since no one apparently loved you enough last time to send feedback, and I've actually seen one of the things you talked about, I figured that I'd send you some this time."
Thank you.
Not for Delta and the Bannermen. Banana men. I might have included some for that if I could go back and watch it, but alas, that's in one of the boxes I've recently packed up for my rather slow-going moving process back to the UK.
Oh,
Superman it is, then.
Right.
I very much agree with you all that this is a far better outing than anything that the Snyderverse had to offer. Considering mm-hmm. his treatment of this film and that he's co-helming the ship of DC Studios, James Gunn certainly seems to get the character in a way that we haven't seen for years, at least on the big screen, as the showrunners of Superman and Lois also understood the assignment. The DC Universe doesn't, at least in my opinion, seem to lend itself to some of the comical, in terms of humour, stylings, as much as the Marvel Universe, so I wasn't expecting something quite as fun as Guardians of the Galaxy, but what we got worked pretty well. One such example was when Superman had come back home to mope in his apartment and had that conversation with Lois.
Oh, yeah.
And while that was happening, the Justice Gang could be seen out of the window fighting some alien blob thing.
Yep. Yep.
That kind of stuff brought up the enjoyment factor and made it less dour than anything Mr. Snyder tried to give us.
That's true.
There were other fun Easter eggs in the background as well, if you were enough of a DC fan to notice them. Yeah. Known store chains such as Big Belly Burger and the coffee shop Jitters, to name a couple. Of course, Sean Gunn got to have a role as well, this time as Maxwell Lord, the man behind the company funding the Justice Gang. There was also more attention given to the rest of the cast instead of just focusing on Superman, Lois and Lex.
Yes.
While Hawkgirl unfortunately wasn't as rounded as the rest of the Justice Gang, this was one of the first times on screen that we've really seen Mr. Terrific show that he can hold his own as a hero in his own right. That sequence with the camp on the beach was a testament to why he has a place in the Justice Gang, along with the obvious powers of Green Lantern Guy Gardner and the mace-wielding Hawkgirl. Note to Keith, we have seen a version of Mr. Terrific before, as he was a regular side character on the Arrowverse version of The Flash, as one of the team's tech whizzies. One thing I did wonder about was the portals between Earth and the interdimensional pocket. They look very much like boom tubes, and I do still wonder if that's where the tech had come from, and if there may be any link to Apocalypse in the future. Speaking of the future, we know that a Supergirl movie is coming, but I do wonder if that may blow a major plot point from this film out of the water. In this movie, we get the revelation that Kal-El's parents sent him to Earth to rule. I have to wonder if Supergirl's, Kara Zor-El's parents, or at least her father, who was the brother of Kal's father, knew that. In DC canon, she didn't leave as a baby like Kal-El did, so she may have a better idea of the intentions of her going to Earth. Yet the Supergirl we saw briefly seemed more interested in partying off-planet than taking over the place.
Yep.
Out of the whole film, this was one of the big thing that kind of bugged me, and I wonder if it'll be addressed when she gets her own film. Still very much enjoyed it, and will be curious to see where this new DC universe goes next. That's it from me for now. Cheerio, Jay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
Yeah, in a way, I hope that she was sent to Earth to help Kal-El rule the Earth, but then she decided, I don't want to do that, and just rebelled.
Yeah, she quite likes it here.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, she was sent to the Earth to go ka-chicka-bow-wow in here, so they could then produce lots of super babies and take over the planet.
First cousins.
And do you know nothing about Egyptian dynasties?
Any more feedback?
That is it.
Lead us out, Crumbly.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast. But in the next one, there'll be more of the same, more fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more hool than new. So, until that...
W for who?
Wondrous.
Whimsical.
Winding.
Wankish.
Wobbly.
Witch-faced.
Wombat.
Comes wobbling towards us.
Wistfully. This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Goodbye.
Farewell.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
It was the way he wore the place.
I warned you.
But it is...
Last time I told you, you waffle on, I'm going to make you sound like a chipmunk. This time I made you sound like a chipmunk on speed.
It's a beautiful piece.
Learn your lesson.
Sorry.
Good boy. You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 478, featuring Adam Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Fake Keith, Gene Riddler, Scott Fuller and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net. I was saying to Jean, ABBA Voyage of Mr. Trick.
Oh, go on.
Right, it's perfect. The whole thing is perfect, isn't it, Jean?
It's perfect.
Yeah, but what they should do is at the entrance, for £5. They'll say, for £5, we can glitterify you. And you go, oh, yes, £5, there you go. And they give you some goggles that you put on. And they give you a big Pritt stick.
Like
and
a,
you
like
draw
a
all over
booth.
Yourself, yeah. and all over your clothes with Pritt stick. And then you go into a thing like the Crystal Dome.
and they can you start the fans, please?
And glitter is everywhere and all over you. And then when that's died down, you step into the shaking room where it's like a shaky floor and it just wobbles all the excess off of you. And then you step out and you're glitterfied.
Yes, top to bottom.
Yeah, totally.
I have to say, glitter will be all over you regardless.
Yes.
We must go and see it sometime.
We're going on the 12th of September, me and Scott and Jean and Heather. It's going to be so good.
We just have this visions of Scott imploding like Jamie used to do when we come home from Thorpe Park. So Karen is going to be carrying him out and he's going to have his head buried in
yes. If you can get me out in the first
place. I'll be carrying you. Yes, it was brilliant.
It was so beautiful.
Yes, it was.
I don't want to leave it.
We can come back. Do you promise? What do we need to do?
Just shout.
Arg!
No, I'll let you know.
Profanity?
No. Wanker!
No profanities.
Oh, bollocks.
Spider-Man
does whatever a spider can.
He can do that. He can do the Red Dwarf theme too.
Oh, it's cold outside. Chris Barry hasn't been well.
No, he hasn't.
He put a thing up saying things are more steady now. He's not going to go into details, but things are all right now for the moment.
And Scarborough seems to be on course because he was doing something down in Scarborough in a couple of months' time.
Up in Scarborough
in a couple of months' time.
He'll just blame Craig Charles for whatever it was, would he?
Oh, I'd imagine so. Neighbours a few doors down, they seem to have gutted their house. They've still got a superloo in the front garden. And you saw different things appearing in the front garden, like the old loo, the old bath and that. And there's just been hammering and that going on.
Actually, the superloo moved, so I think it's...
It quite, moved?
It did, didn't it? Because it was right up next to the house.
Yes, and then it moved closer to the fence.
I think it's actually a TARDIS. Yeah.
Oh, hang on. I'm wobbly.
It's age, dear. It happens to all of us.
Milkshake's kicked in.
Have we done the silence?
Oh,
we haven't.
Not that we will be able to at the moment.
We are recording, Mella.
Okay, 3, 2, 1.
Just heard your stomach go.
That wasn't me.
That was Scott
cracking up. Should we try again?
Yeah. I thought, I need to burp now. I hold it in.
Well, all I can hear is 3, 2, 1.
Right, you ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1.
Oh, man, breathe in. You do not breathe in and hold your breath.
Breathe in hold your breath.
We do, it's our competition. We've done it every time.
You're failing miserably at it today.
I'm not, it was him. Right, last time. And if you don't get this one right, Keith is going to flop his old chap out and show you his elephant impression.
Excuse me?
Yes, you are.
I can't. I've been injured.
Injured?
Bobbit.
Oh, you should see his scar.
Oh.
Not on his knob. Oh. No. Stand up. I want people to see. You mentioned it. I want people to see your scar.
Is it in an embarrassing place?
No, it's not. he's had his appendix out.
Oh.
Mm. Oh, when did that happen?
Hmm. When he had his appendix out. They cut you open to get it.
When
how
was
long
that?
Ago? No, it was the cat. He was cuddling the cat, so he needed to jump.
I was cuddling the cat. We had, I put a handful of biscuits on the windowsill so the dog can't get them. Mm. And I was in the process of manoeuvring her onto the windowsill when she leapt at the last minute and used me as a springboard. Mm, I thought, oh, that's smart. And then go to work and mind my own business, do my work. Suddenly need the loo, so I go to the toilet and they have a full-length mirror.
Right.
Mm. And I'm there lifting my shirt up to undo my trousers. What the f***? Blood pouring.
Blimey. It looks like it could have gone through your shirt.
Yeah.
The shirt wasn't damaged at all.
Perfect.
I think she got the claw through the shirt and lifted the shirt.
Yeah.
Anyway, right wuss face. Ready to try again?
Okay.
Three. two, one.
Now that was you.
I didn't do anything.
Oh no, didn't do anything.
All of
that distraction with the scar, and it still happened.
Are you all there? Quiet.
You're there. You go.
I'm licking my lips. I've got salty chicken on them. All right, serious this time.
Right, serious, yeah. Serious.
3, 2, 1. Damn!
And all I can hear is crumbling
from
your chair.
And his belly again.
Forwards and backwards.
Okay, crumbly.
When everyone's recovered their composure.
Oh, boy.
Matthew Sweet in Conversion? In Conversion?
Conversation, I should be saying.
I should be. You're damn not you, having AI. A very good day today, aren't you?
One. Yeah, there's only one I've not seen so far.
There's only five in the series, isn't there?
It's a good one. No, there are 10 in the
series.
Dudes,
can I introduce this?
It's, I was just saying, next one's a good one. Sorry.
Hang your head. Oh, boy. Let's see how long it takes him to get the door open.
No. See, when I tried it, the door was closed.
I think you pushed against
the door had been. Ooh. Well, nobody told me.
No.
Well, does it blame other people?
Well, I notice it's my fault, but the door handle came off and deliberately sabotaged.
Well, the door handle didn't come off for him.
It's a security feature.
It is.